Bethancourt waits. The pitch is tapped in front of the mound. And now the catcher throws the ball into center field. Nico around third. He's coming home. Here's the throw. The slide. Save.
Great play by Nico to score. But this is one of those plays where the ball is dribbled right in front of home plate. And I mean, it's dribbled 6 inches in front of the plate. They tag Bethancourt right away, so he's out. And then Nico moves off the bag right away, and he gets into a rundown, or what would have been a rundown. The catcher starts running out there, but just kind of lobs the ball out to second base. And Garcia, instead of getting in front of this ball and trying to at least keep it in front of him, does not. And the ball just goes out into center field, and it just ends up being one of them weird plays where now the ball is just trickling out in the center. And Nico just goes all the way from second all the way home, and the Cubs score their fifth run. Very bizarre play.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
It is the last hit and run of the baseball season as the Bears have come to take our Sunday mornings away. Those jerks, but they are going to be pretty good. In fact, a week from today, you'll be listening to Bears pregame with Mike Mulligan and Olin Krutz and Pat Manley right here in this time slot. But right now, we get a chance to go to Washington and talk to the man whose voice you heard right there describing that play. He is the great Ron Coomer from the Cubs Radio Network. He joins us right now on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Coom is roughly a mile and a half above home plate in Washington, getting ready to see the Cubs go for a sweep, having won 11 of their last 14. They are four games over 500 for the first time since May 23rd. How about this, Ron? It's the best month of baseball the Cubs have played since May of 2021. More than 3 years since they had a month this good.
Yeah, it's been a fun month for the Cubs, that's for sure. They have played good baseball. And I want to say congratulations to you, buddy. Another year of your show, you know, and bringing baseball to all of everybody in Chicago on the weekend mornings between you and Bruce Levine. So it's a great listen, and I always get to kick my weekend off by listening to you and Brucey in the mornings as either I'm coming to the park or sitting in a booth. So congratulations to you.
Hey, thanks, buddy. I mean, who's got it better than us getting to talk baseball in this town? Are you kidding me?
I don't disagree. I understand that football is right around the corner, but yeah, I understand. It's been a great summer listening. But yeah, the Cubs have played great baseball. They've had, you know, you kind of knew that this was going to be their time of the year that they were going to have a chance at making some hay, right? When you looked at the schedule in spring training, and they've done that. You have to win these games, and they've done that. You knew that this was going to be a good time for them if they were playing good baseball. They have. The offense has come alive. And to me, that's why this team is doing what it's doing now. The offense has had its struggles. It is not struggling now. Some young guys at the bottom of the lineup are doing their job and doing it really well. And because of that, you're looking at, you know, a team that's starting to gain ground in this wild card race.
You have that perspective above the field, Coom, and you've got the eye of a player, and you can see things in the quality of the play that often don't come through the box score. Does the quality of the game that they're playing match the record over these past couple of weeks here?
It does, because the at-bats that guys are having, so quick for instance, when you look at the adjustments that Amaya has made at home plate in his setup right before he gets ready to attack the baseball, he has made some major changes. There's been some talk about some of the things, but at the end of the day, he is now in a position where he is loaded and launched, and his hands are in a good spot where he can actually make a good pass at the ball. And he's a big, strong kid, and it's working out. I think the other guy that we talk about regularly is Pete Kerr-Armstrong, and Pete is another guy that has put himself in a position by making some swing plane adjustments to now all of a sudden he can be successful and put the ball in play, where, you know, he was swinging up when I first saw him, and that's not going to work for him, and he was way uphill and not good. Now he's made that adjustment, and I know I've talked to John Maley yesterday about it, but Pete is starting to work downhill. He's on plane with the ball now, which is important, and now he's using the whole field, and he's got a chance. And when he's on base, it's dynamic. So those two guys, to me, I'm really happy for both of them being young guys and figuring it out in the middle of a big league season, which is not easy.
That's awesome that you talked to John Maley, the assistant hitting coach, about Pete, because it is remarkable to see where PCA is after where he was, where it looked like it was chaos there. And you're like, what is the offensive approach? So that's huge. And I haven't heard much about that, the plane of the swing, because something was written about him having more weight on the back half of his stance, Ron. But so is that swing plane, is that a natural effect of some of the other stuff, or was that by design to get the swing on plane?
It's 100% by design.
Good.
What was happening is you can get loaded to the backside and get ready to swing, but if your first move is your back shoulder, your backside collapses down and the swing plane goes up, you're not going to be successful in our league. And that has been taught for a while. And because everybody, you know, for the longest time, pull and elevate every baseball. Well, that's great in theory and great in batting practice, but it's not always great in a game, and you're teaching guys how to hit 220. And we don't want that. You know, you want guys to be able to have quality at bats and do some different things depending on who's pitching. And I think Pete making that change from swinging uphill to getting going downhill and his hands above the ball, now you see the strikeouts are less. He gets a longer look at the ball because his swing is direct to the ball. And, you know, we see him yesterday or 2 days ago, he goes 0-2 right away, chases two high fastballs, fine. And, you know, guy's throwing hard. And there's a man on third, and instead of punching out on the slider, he takes the slider down and in. And then the next pitch is up and out over the plate, and he pounds it to left center field and ends up with a sacrifice fly and a great productive at bat.
Hmm.
2 months ago, that's a punch out, and he's walking to the dugout.
Man,
I promise you.
That's awesome. And then when he gets on, like that on Friday after the two-run double, he moved from second to third on a ground ball to the left side, you know, and then and then came in on a ground ball to first, where like they kind of stupidly threw home and he beat it by 5 or 6 feet. It's like, it must be so fun in the dugout to watch a teammate that runs like that.
I don't know about the dugout. I just wanted to be able to run like that. To me, he affects the game. I mean, you see it. He gets on first base, and you can see the tension in the pitcher that's on the mound, knowing that at any moment he's going to turn whatever, that walk into a double or a single into a double and possibly a triple. So you see the tension with the opposing team when he gets on base.
Man, see, that's the stuff. Like that, the attention, the soft factor of that on a team. And how about as a lineup, when you know that the bottom of the lineup is actually going to, you know, be a factor? I just as a viewer, like, I don't feel anymore that Seiya and Hap and Bellinger have to do something every time that they're up. You know, it's like, so I got to imagine that as a lineup, it feels so much better to know that you could get production from anywhere in that lineup right now.
Well, this winning streak that we're on now, that's, I would say, 60% of the production has come from, you know, the last three spots in the lineup. And that's what's happened. Now, the other guy's done their job, and Ian is, you know, banging the ball around the yard, hit some home runs, and same thing with Belly. But, you know, there's been a lot of production in games at that bottom of the lineup. And, you know, when you can flip the lineup over and have guys on base, and specifically Pete, well, the way he can run, and then you get him on base in front of some of the guys that are swinging pretty well, that's pretty potent.
Yeah, so Ron Coomer is here with us on 670 The Score. There's nothing more fun in sports than a hot baseball team. Like it feels like a different guy is coming up big every day, and it feels like it, in that bullpen too. It's like, hey, there's Nate Pearson with two big innings in a tight game yesterday.
I would agree, and the reason why you feel that so much is because we play every day, right? I mean, you can't feel quite the same, you know, in the other sports because they don't play every day, but in baseball, you know, there's a that factors in, because you know, the offense rolls and the line gets moving in the dugout and it's high fives and it's different guys day after day. That's important. And I think in our game, when a team gets rolling like the Cubs are now, there's a very high confidence factor. And we saw it in Pittsburgh, even against Skeens, right? They came out,
yep,
and they started banging a baseball. And he might be the best pitcher and best arm in our game right now, but they did a very nice job against him.
Yeah, and that Skeens game is the one with 11 runs scored, mm-hmm, in the last three innings. Have you ever seen anything like that? I mean, that was outrageous, but it also sort of felt inevitable because of the run they're on. It's weird.
It did. It felt inevitable, and you knew the game plan against Skeens was be aggressive when you get a pitch to hit. And then if you can, as an offense, if it starts playing out, try to run his pitch count up, because then you can get him out of the game, and the Achilles heel of Pittsburgh is their bullpen. And that's exactly what they did. And he pitched five innings. He was out of the game. His pitch count was up around 100. So the guys at bats, they didn't have the quick outs. They didn't have the quick punch out, and they did a great job. And then they got to that bullpen, and I really haven't. I don't even know if in Little League I've seen anything like that where you scored that many runs the last three innings. And, you know, after the seventh inning, I think Cubs put up a four spot. And I just look across at Pat, and I'm like, this game is not over. This is not even close to over. And when the Cubs started banging Aroldis Chapman around the field, I'm like, we're going to win this game. It's just one of those feelings, yeah.
Oh, unbelievable. Dansby Swanson in the two-hole today, again, against the lefty. That's pretty cool that Dansby has picked it up to the point where you can put him there, and he's been delivering there.
Yeah, I think it's important to get a right-hander up there and give Michael a chance to drop down in the lineup or get a day off. Today in the lineup, you're going to get Wisdom is going to get a chance to play first base and see if he can do a little damage in the first half of the game. So I like that. But, you know, the one thing about Dansby is he's shown now that he's starting to cover more of the plate, putting the ball in play a little more and doing some damage, you know, the other way. And, so what that does is it's making it a little more difficult for opposing teams to pitch to him. You know, there for a while, his approach was all to the pull side, his move to the ball, and you know that can be a difficult thing. You got to be perfect with timing for that to happen and happen well for you, and you know it's a tough one.
So Jordan Wicks up and he'll pitch today, and Miles Mastroboni up as the 28th guy. Some people were hoping for Owen Casey, but Miles can do a lot of things for you as a guy at the bottom of that roster.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's probably it. When you start evaluating, you know, what your needs are to win each day, and where guys are going to play. Right now, if you look at the lineup, you know, we were talking with Counts probably 2 weeks ago about, you know, sprinting to the finish line. And you really can't sprint to the finish line in baseball from that point where we were at with your pitching staff because it's too long, right? I mean, they pitch a couple days in a row, they need a day. But with your lineup, you can, with the eight guys that are playing on defense, and that's what he's doing. You know, it's basically the same lineup almost every day, same guys out there. Today, the one change is Wisdom, and Amai every now and then gets the day off with Bethancourt. But the lineup stayed the same. So, you know, what is it going to take to win? Do you need a pinch runner? Do you need a guy that can play four positions, you know, out in the field? So I think those are the things that, you know, are a cause and effect why Miles Mastroboni is back, and he can do some of those things.
Coom, what do you think? I mean, 18-8 in August, only 1 month left. I was looking at the schedules and running it down for the Padres and the Diamondbacks and the Braves and the Mets. You got to pass two of those. Can they do it?
They can. They got to keep playing the kind of baseball they're playing. The schedule is not going to be as advantageous as it was in the month of August. You've got the Yankees, you've got the Dodgers in there, and you've got the Phillies. And, you know, so that's nine ball games out of the month that you know you're playing teams that are going to the playoffs. So, you know, the schedule's not quite as easy. But, you know, when you're on a roll and you're playing good baseball, you're playing good baseball. It really doesn't matter who you're playing. So hopefully they can continue on this roll. And, you know, they're four games out right now, gained a game on Atlanta last night. You know, you're going to get a win today and hopefully get a little help and start whittling away At that lead by Atlanta for that third wild card spot.
Next weekend, Cubs, Yankees, couple of those Ron Coomer teams coming together.
Yeah, it's always great to have the Bombers in town. It's always, you know, I was talking to somebody here in Washington yesterday about that, and, you know, it's the traveling circus when the Bombers come to town, and it's always entertaining, that's for sure.
Coom, thanks, man. Appreciate the time. Have a great ball game today, and 12-3, which sounds pretty good to me after today.
Yeah, that would be nice, Biggs. And we've had a great road trip. It'd be nice to finish it off today here in D.C. with another win. Great to talk to you, bud.
You too, man. Thanks so much. That's Ron Coomer. He's the best. So the Cubs go for a 6th straight win. It is Jordan Wicks against Mitchell Parker. And Coom mentioned Pete Crow Armstrong down at 8. Or you mentioned Patrick Wisdom in the 6th spot at first base. It's Hap, Swanson, Suzuki, Bellinger, Paredes, Wisdom, Nico, Pete Crow Armstrong, and Amaya. It's Matt Spiegler with you on the Hit and Run on the final Sunday of the Hit and Run season. And Anthony Rizzo will be in town with the Yankees. Texter Crazy Dave remarking how emotional that's going to be to see Rizzo come in after more than 3 years. Just had Baez come back. It's, yeah, there's always always something. And there's a big event on Thursday night, by the way, for the Ben Zobrist Champion Forward Foundation. And Champion Forward, a very cool organization that Ben Zobrist is working with. And the MC of that event on Thursday night at Galleria Marchetti is me, is yours truly. I'm very much looking forward to being there on Thursday with Ben and hopefully some Cubs people, maybe some Yankees people as well. And what should be a very cool event, Ben's cause, helping with mental health and psychological preparation for youth sports. Some good stuff that he's very passionate about. And he talks about, you know, going through depression as a professional athlete and how that has been for Ben Zobrist. So that's very cool. Go to championforward.com. I think there are a couple tickets still available to that thing. Very much looking forward to being a part of it on Thursday night. And that's between Cubs Pirates and Cubs Yankees over there at Wrigley Field. All right, when we come back on 670 The Score, Jason Benetti on life as the Tigers broadcaster and more. A chunk of the PBP is next on Hit and Run.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Set up there again. Benintendi gives it a ride for center field. Matt Feerling makes the catch.
Oh, they thought it was
and wow, they
outs.
Thought there were two out. This is going to be a double play.
Oh, my goodness. What a way to end the game.
The Tigers win, and the White Sox have yet another play that typifies their season.
That was Jason Benetti of the Tigers broadcast with what we thought was one of the defining moments of the White Sox brutal season earlier this year. There's been too many to count. Paul Sullivan with a good column in the Tribune about the many embarrassing moments of this White Sox season. If you're looking to relive some of those or kind of catalog them, Sully helps you out quite a bit there. But that voice, Jason Benetti, one of the best play-by-play voices in all of baseball, and a friend, and was on the PBP Voices of Baseball this week. High recommendation for the entire episode. Lots of good stuff, fun stuff. The man was in town for a week. First, the Tigers were at the Cubs. Then they were at the White Sox. That means the same hotel for a good long while. And I went by that hotel and hung out with Jason, and we recorded there. And I talked with him about building a new broadcast with the Tigers, getting to know a new clubhouse, and also just kind of being in town and getting to see his old friends in the White Sox clubhouse as well.
Everybody in life wants to have a chance to be what they really, really want to put out in the world. The Tigers gave me that chance. So anybody who says, like, well, you know, he's from Chicago, he cares so much about the White Sox and all that stuff, whether you think that's true or not, all I've ever wanted is a chance to be the best version of myself with the best crew around, with the best creativity. The Tigers have afforded me the opportunity to do that. Yeah, I'm on the Tigers' side, and punching down is not only uncouth, but like, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
If I say anything about that in any way that is unreasonable for that moment, it's, first of all, out of character for what I want to be. And then second of all, like, it makes me the story.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't want to do that. Oh, then dude, that takes away from the organization that hired me to be me. Mm-hmm. Why am I still being beholden to a former life? That's not worth it for me mm-hmm. in any way. Like, I didn't want to be in that, frankly. So why would I bring myself back into that?
Right. Right. So, so
that's why I didn't want the Bally people to show the reception I got on the video board day one of the season. And I was grateful the White Sox did it. But I told them, like, don't show that on our telecast. I'm the Tigers guy. And they vetoed me.
I hadn't realized that. Yeah.
They were like, no, no, no. We need to show it. Like, we need, it's nice. We need to show. And I was like, whatever. But I'm the Tigers guy.
Mm-hmm.
I am no longer the White Sox guy. I've chosen this.
Right.
We're moving on.
So when you see or catch wind of the troubles that they're having in that booth, and I say this from Chicago, where listeners know it's been a bumpy season just for me and how I have had to deal with that booth and talk about it, because I don't take pleasure in... Frankly, I don't take pleasure in criticism. Like, it's not... I love this business, and I love what people do, and I'm... this whole podcast is a love letter to the craft, and I, of course, have had to talk about some issues in that booth. Like, how has that been to process for you, either privately or publicly? I assume you've been inundated with people reaching out saying, hey, have you heard what this guy did this time and what this guy did that time? How do you deal with that?
Nobody's ever asked me publicly. Like, you're literally the first person who's asked me publicly. And my response...
80 games in an 8-game stretch. That was the most in an 8-game span for the Cubs since 1935. And they've only had seasons with an 8-game spans with 80 runs or more in 1900, 1929, 1930. That from Sarah Langs during the course of this crazy week. And what you have seen is the resurgence of many, including Isak Paredes. In each of his last 6 games, he has at least one walk. He's reached base 6 times in the last 2 games against the Nats. 13 of his last 26 plate appearances, Paredes has reached base. Dansby Swanson is hitting well enough to move up in the order against left-handed pitchers, and then he has delivered when that has been the case. That double yesterday to bring home the 4th run in that 5th inning after they fell behind 2-0. So you've got Dansby hitting well. You've got Paredes now hitting well and drawing walks, looking like himself. The explosion of Pete Crow Armstrong and Miguel Amaya at the 8 and 9 spots. And then the defense. You had a PCA with a gorgeous throw to cut down Tena of the Nationals for a single, trying to stretch it into a double. Bethancourt with an outrageous throw from home to get base stealers. Did you hear Nico Horner talking about the throwing arm of Christian Bethancourt?
Yeah, he's got one of the strongest throwing arms I've ever seen from catcher, and spent some time as a pitcher because of that. And now he's playing a great brand of baseball for us. It's been incredible, the energy and consistency he's brought in his time with us.
All of a sudden, the catcher position with Bethancourt and Amaya, as good as any in the entire league. Just an outrageous, outrageous thing. Yes, the Cubs are the team of the moment. They are 11-3 since Danny Parkins left for Fox Sports 1. That's all I'm saying. Okay? 11-3. And Council has sounded better? You've heard that. You know that. It's all coming together as the mush is gone. But overall, managerial confidence, the bullpen, the best in baseball since June the 1st. Have you ever seen a bullpen completely recraft and rebuild itself the way that this bullpen has over the course of a season? It is remarkable. And that should give you confidence in the partnership of Craig Counsell and Jed Hoyer moving forward. I have the September schedules for all the wildcard teams of consequence. I'll get to that in our next segment. But we've got phone callers as well. Ron Coomer at the top of the hour. A chunk of Jason Benetti from the PBP, Voices of Baseball, coming up in the next hour as well. But let's go to the phone lines and pick it up with Daryl in Aurora on Hit and Run. Good morning, Daryl. How are you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great show. You know, a couple things I think you were commenting on just a second ago. First of all, you know, credit to the Cubs front office. I think that trade with Morel and Paredes, that's obviously proved very productive. And I think Counsell is showing his worth. I mean, he's a steady manager. I think the team, you can see they're having fun. They believe in him, so that's good. But I don't want to jinx the Cubs. We still have a long way to go. If they can go 20-6, which would be incredible, that would, I think they'd make the playoffs. They'd give them 90 wins, but in the high 80s would be good. But, you know, pitching, obviously, that gets you, you know, into the playoffs and it takes you far. We all love Kyle Hendricks. I mean, you know, he's the last guy from the World Series team 2016. You know, if you're the advisor, the pitcher whisperer right now, how would you handle him? Would you keep him and no change? B, would you put him in the pen maybe as a long reliever? Or C, something else? I'll shut up and take your comment. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I would have Kyle stay in the rotation for now. I'd give Shota Imanaga one more long stretch through, give him that extra day. But if Jordan Wicks looks good, and when I say the Imanaga, they've done a lot. They try to give him 5 days, occasionally 6 days. You're going to need him to be absolute nails going the rest of the way. I give Kyle Hendricks one more start. But if Wicks is really good today, and Wicks, then Kyle gets bumped. Kyle gets bumped to the bullpen. He showed a flexibility and a willingness, and frankly, an excellence out of the bullpen that kind of you know recharged his season. And could be an effective person to have out there. Sure as hell, rather see him than Ethan Roberts from out of that bullpen. But yeah, I give him one more go in the rotation. And you know, it's been great to see him matter again and have moments that mattered again. The Christopher Morel trade with Isak Paredes was a really good trade, and I knew it at the time and said so at the time, and people had a hard time sort of wrapping their head around it. But Paredes, you're starting to see what he can do in terms of getting on base. He's always been able to walk, and that has helped when there's been hitting slumps. At least he can walk. Morel down in Tampa, I know he homered in the first two games or two of the first three or whatever, but overall, since he's been in Tampa in 25 starts over 27 games, he's hitting .190. The OPS is .583 for Morel. And that's with four hits in his last three games. So, look, I like Chris a lot and really enjoyed him and thought it was a worthwhile experiment to have him at third and to find a way to get him in that lineup every day. But it's a no-brainer of a trade for Paredes, which is starting to bear its fruit finally. Let's talk to Ron on the South Side on 670 The Score. Ron, what's happening?
Baseball is still life, baby.
It is, man. It is.
A couple of things. I was so disappointed I did not get a chance to hear Barry Ron. Love Barry. So I'll be keeping Miss, what they say, Miss Little Miss a lot. So got to keep my radio on constantly. But if you talk to him at some point, please, please, just say, you know, Ron said hello. Love, Barry. Okay. A couple of things, real baseball things, and I'll make it real quick. Maybe before the show ends, you will maybe give your picks, and maybe you can talk about it as revised picks. I had Baltimore and Atlanta. The injuries just – and I don't – Atlanta's not going to be able to overcome those injuries. And I think Baltimore Speed is going to really kick themselves because they did not add any pitching. They held on to those prospects. The perfect trade was right there for them in the White Sox. So saying that, the National League is a little more interesting, a little more wide open. I just think the Dodgers might. And like Steve said, whoever gets hot, if I had to take two teams, I'm right now I'm going to have to say the Dodgers. And probably the Yankees, that offense. So I'll just go with that. I think Dodgers will win it all. So, again, maybe you can, if you get a chance, maybe you can give some picks. And like Steve and everybody else, hoping that this is not the last time that we get a chance to talk to you and listen to you, Steve. And that's it.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate you very much, man. Yeah, I'm going to last segment of the show at 11:40 or so. I'll give my thoughts on September and some postseason as well. It does feel absurd on the 1st of September to be making postseason predictions. It feels ridiculous. But such is our lot in life when the Bears are going to be awesome. It's a different tone from your Spiegs right now. Yeah, like I remain, as always, a little grumpy when Hit and Run goes away. But I'm straight up psyched for Bears season. I really am. We're all going to live together. We're all going to live together as the Cubs make this absurd run that will continue. And I can't pick the Braves because are the Braves going to collapse? Find themselves out of it? I don't know.
Could they pull a Cubs? A 2023 Cubs?
There's another team that I'm looking at that it's hard to imagine it happening. It's really hard to imagine any of it happening. But so, I mean, you're better off just kind of hoping your team plays their ass off. I just said Cubs at 18-8 was their best month since 2021. And now callers want them to go 20-6. Yeah. 20-6. So you end up at 90-72. That'll probably get it done. Probably.
Who knows, right?
I don't know, man.
The National League's so weird. There might not be a 100-game winner this year.
No. But it could be a few. Could be like six teams at 90 wins. Yeah. That's entirely possible, or at least four or five. All right, we're going to continue to take your phone calls, and I'll give you those September schedules when we come back. Ron Coomer, top of the hour here on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
The next advancement in his abilities as a hitter will be using the other side of the field. I think for Pete.
3-2 pitch. Hit in the air, left center field. That's going to be an extra base hit. Speaking of opposite field hitting, Ron, very nice call by you. It's a two-run double for Pete Poe Armstrong. Cubs lead 9-2.
The misses are good. The misses are the right misses. You know, it feels good. You know, I go up there confident every at bat. But I feel that from the dugout, too. You know, that also comes with preparation and, you know, just staying very consistent in my work. It's a lot different than a month ago, but, you know, I'm just going to take it day by day.
So much of the mental challenge of baseball is present in that cut from Pete Crow Armstrong. Taking it day by day. How about the misses are the right misses? You know you're going to miss. You're going to fail more than six times out of every 10. You're going to. But they need to be the right misses. Well, at least I hit that one hard. Well, at least I made contact. Well, at least I was on time with that swing and miss. Well, I did have that one pitch in this at bat where I felt good. Well, I did guess right, even if he got me. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. The mental gymnastics that it takes to be good at this game. But Pete Crow Armstrong has been very, very good at this game. The one technical thing that changed for him, because we've heard a lot about the no stride for Miguel Amaya, where he's not, you know, taking a big step with that front foot. For Pete Crow Armstrong, subtly having more weight in the back of his stance, more weight on the back leg, and then exploding through it on contact. And who knows what else that has done to the mechanics of the swing. Such a funky game where one thing can affect several others. But Pete Crow Armstrong, a big part of the Cubs surge. Craig Timber looms. The Cubs will come back after finishing today in Washington. They'll have three with Pittsburgh here at Wrigley. And then a tough series with the Yankees here. Then they go on the road against the Dodgers. But then their final 17 games, they only play one team with a winning record, and that's a three-game set in Philadelphia. The other 14 are theoretically cake
on that schedule. So what kind of run can they go on? Needs to be a great one. Conversely, the Padres atop the wild card standings, they have a home and home with the Giants. They have a 3 with the Astros at home. They are at Seattle at one point. They finish at the Dodgers and at the Diamondbacks. Padres have a tough row to hoe, but they have the most leeway to do it with, and they've got an absolutely stacked bullpen. So Cubs have those Yankees coming in here after the Pirates before they go on the road against the Dodgers. The Diamondbacks, second in the wild card, have a home-and-home with the Giants and a home-and-home with the Brewers. They're also at the Astros, and they're home with the Padres to finish. As I mentioned, that's a tough schedule for Arizona. Look, there have been teams that have collapsed. Cincy has fallen off, obviously. The Cardinals have fallen off, obviously. The Giants have fallen off, obviously. Cubs need more teams to do that. The Mets have a lot of games against winning teams coming up. They finished the season playing the Phillies twice. They have the Braves and they have the Brewers, do the Mets. You're going to need them to not play great. And the Braves, they have a lot of ease in their month of September, but they do have series with the Dodgers, the Mets, and the Royals. So you'll need those to go against Atlanta. Atlanta is obviously the most obvious team that you need to collapse, and it's hard to foresee. It would take historic excellence on your part and a real bad collapse by a very mature Braves team and organization. The Cardinals, they travel to the Yankees and the Brewers to open the month. Then they have to face Cleveland in the second to last week. The Giants have the Diamondbacks, the Padres, the Brewers, the Orioles, the Royals, and the Cardinals. The Giants, I think, are toast. But you need the Mets and the Braves to play poorly while you play well. And it's difficult to conceive of, but sure as hell not impossible. 4 games back in the wild card. Let's go to Stan in Bellwood on 670 The Score. Stan, it's still baseball season, damn it.
You better believe it. I haven't given up, except on the White Sox, Pete. Let me tell you something. This is the final weekend. Fingers crossed that it's not, but for Hit and Run. So I just had breakfast. I am not going to talk about the White Sox.
Okay? Well done, sir.
I'm not going to do it.
Do it.
Okay, listen, I got called out earlier in the show. I'm a broken record this time of year, no matter who is hosting Hit and Run. So for Ben and Queens, I will speak my yearly reminder to Score Management. Mitch, I'm looking at you. September is a baseball month, even more so than football. That's just a gentle nudge, a gentle reminder for me. I've been doing it for, I don't know, 20 years or whatever it is of Hit and Run, so I just want to toss out that reminder. It's the way I feel, and I always hate that, that this is the end of Hit and Run during the summer. I hate it, but I'm just going to let those thoughts be known. Now, Steve, I want to stay on the national, with the pennant races here. We're heading into September. You tossed out that question. You asked Stoney who he thought was going to wind up winning this thing, and I want to talk about that too because I find myself in the same place where he is. I generally have, some inkling or some clue, but I don't know. Full disclosure, at the start of the season, Steve, my picks were Baltimore and Philly in both leagues. I'm not high on those picks, but, once you make a pick, that's your pick until they either or both teams are eliminated. Baltimore seems here to be willing to just fall off a cliff with Craig Kimbrell. I don't get that. As far as the Phillies are concerned, Bryce Harper, since the All-Star break, has really, really fallen into the dumper here. They still have pretty good pitching, but their offense is leaving a lot to be desired. And I, you know, that's usually their strong suit. They're gonna have to do it with pitching if Harper doesn't hit. And I have to remind you, you might be wanting to forget it, Speaks, but you raised an eyebrow with me last week when you declared the Diamondbacks as the best team in baseball possibly right now. But the Dodgers have just stormed in there and put blood in their urine, these last couple of days. So I'm just thinking that probably once the season ends, that's just going to be a reset for everybody, because I don't think there's a team right now that anybody needs to be afraid of. They all have flaws.
Yeah, they do. Everybody does. Thank you, Stan, for the call, and thank you for the message to management, as you have been doing. Every team does have flaws, that is for sure. This is Bob in Aurora on 670 The Score. Ron Coomer coming up in about 5 or 7 minutes. What's up, Bob?
Hey, Matt, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thanks for getting me on today. I just wanted to let you and your listeners know how much I've enjoyed the PBP podcast.
Oh, thanks, man.
I grew up in St. Louis with Harry Carey, and I loved hearing Chip Carey with you recently. And then I heard you with Brian Anderson recently, and BA is someone I've gotten to know through the tournament, the NCAA tournament. He does such a great job, but I loved hearing his story about how he came up in baseball, and all of these PBP podcasts are just fascinating. So I wanted to let you know how much I appreciate that, and also have your listeners try it out. I know you bring it on in the show today and last week, and just wanted to chime in on how good it is.
Hey, Bob, I really appreciate that. It's been an absolute joy to do. We're got one or two more probably here for season two, but it's all different play-by-play voices from around baseball. And if you want to listen to Bob, go to your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts and search PBP, like play-by-play. And this week, Jason Benetti is really good talking about life with the Tigers, and you'll hear a little bit about that and how it relates to life with the White Sox as well, coming up later on in the next hour. But it's been an absolute joy to do, so thank you for the kind words. It is Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Miles Mastroboni is here, and Jordan Wicks is here. And by here, I mean with the Cubs in Washington, D.C. We'll talk about the September call-ups. We'll talk about the team of the moment, the Cubs, next with our friend Ron Coomer on The Score.